One, two, three. This is Dr. Alex Avila with Love University, and we're back. I'm an author, speaker, and psychologist, and every week we talk about how to love yourself, others, and a higher nature, how to improve your life and your love, relationships, and your business, spiritual health, financial careers. And this week, we're very fortunate to be at the Los Angeles Book Festival here in Los Angeles, California, USC. And we have great guests, and we're saying hi to our fans and meeting a lot of great readers and people. And our last show for today, we've been here all day long, is a remarkable woman named Barbara Salzman, whose son unfortunately died of cancer at age 22, but he wrote a best-selling children's book called The Jester Has Lost His Jingle as a senior product at Yale University. And she, as the mother, reads Jester in schools and hospitals throughout the U.S. I think you said in hundreds of hospitals. Over 200,000 children have received the book for free as a gift. She wants to share it with many children that have cancer and other illnesses throughout the world. Over the almost 25 years, they've been doing this, doing speaking, and they have a literacy program, Farley Fund, which is a nonprofit. She's received numerous awards, national acclaim, including the Mom's Choice Award. And her goal is to give this book to every child in the U.S. Welcome, Barbara, to the show.
Thank you so much, Dr. Avila. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yes, we're very excited. You know, this loving energy that you have with your son that continues to live forward. Now, let me ask you a question. You said you mortgaged your house to do this. Why did you believe so much in your son's story? What was the draw of you to do this book?
When our son David first showed me his story before his senior year at Yale, he had conceived of the story when he was on a summer study program in Greece that was actually a USC program because his father teaches at USC. And we met him and he showed us the outline for the story and we all fell in love with it and we believed that it had the possibility of being a classic of children's literature.
It's amazing. You know, finding meaning in loss is something that we often try to do. You know, unfortunately, losing a child is a horrible tragedy. And I actually worked one time with a mother. I do victims of crime work. So mother, her son came home from college after years, out of state. And she was very happy, but he went out with some friends, and apparently he talked to a girl. She took it the wrong way. Their family came and beat him to death. And she was obviously, destroyed, and we helped her through counseling. But eventually she was able to realize that she loved children, so she became a foster mom, and that gave her some of the love back that she had lost. So I wonder if there's something about that, that you were able to do something with that.
Well, it's true. I do love children. It's also true that the loss of someone special in your life, especially a child, is truly irreplaceable. But by the same token, David had such a strong presence in life and such a love for life and was so compassionate and caring and filled with humor and goodwill. And all of that is reflected in the book he created called The Jester Has Lost His Jingle. And he created it in the summer when he walked into a classroom and he made a silly joke and nobody laughed. And he went to his desk, took out his notebook and began to doodle and ended up drawing a very sad little face. He looked at it and he thought, wow, it looks like a little jester. And he put three triangles on its head and then wrote the words under it, the jester has lost his jingle. He was, of course, thinking of himself, but that little sad face stayed with him, and what was within that drawing stayed with him, and he was in touch with his feelings. The inspiration for this book, which is now almost 25 years in print, was an incident that maybe lasted less than 2 minutes. But he was very much in touch with his feelings and his outlook on life. And that evening after he came up with this little sad drawing, he thought, maybe I could do a children's book about a jester who loses his jingle. What would he do to find it again? Would anybody help him? Where would he go? What would he do? What kind of adventures would he have? And he sat down that night and he wrote out the entire storyline. He had had classes at Yale in storyboarding and designing for film and so forth, and he storyboarded the entire story, and the story turns on the jester meeting after being banished from the castle for not being able to make the king laugh anymore. The story turns on the jester meeting a little girl in the hospital.
Before you go on, Barbara, when I read the, when I actually saw the play that you did, and saw the book, I started thinking psychologically.
Right.
That each of these things has a little message to it.
It does.
And for example, I would ask you, number one is, why has the laughter went away in the world? You know, because a lot of people take things too seriously. They lost their mojo. You know, they worry about bills and other a lot of other problems. So what's going on in our society, do you think?
Well, our society, when David thought of this story, was not quite at the place it is today. I don't think there was as much division, but there were a lot of things that needed attention, and David actually included them in the book. The book includes the jester meeting a homeless man, and it was somebody David met every day at Yale. And David included newspapers that people are reading, and they carry headlines that talk about issues that today are of even more concern than when David was alive. And I think probably everybody loses their ability to laugh or to smile or find joy in their life and their day in different ways and at different times. The loss of a child is something really beyond comprehension if it hasn't happened to you. But I do remember very clearly when David was ill and we were walking past his room, and he had had very rigorous, awful treatments for his cancer. He had had a bone marrow transplant and radiation and very heavy-duty chemo. And we stopped by his room and he said, if I ever find, if things don't go the way we want, that you walk by my room and cry every day, I'm going to be very angry with you.
Okay. So laughter, I mean, talking about laughter later on, is kind of a medicine, right, that people have.
It is.
An idea of, you know, being spontaneous and, you know, finding the joy in things. But I like some of the phrases that you said. You said, the world lost its humor, but I didn't, is one thing you say.
Right.
And also the idea of when I feel like crying, I turn sadness upside down.
And stand it on its head.
Exactly. So that's kind of, in psychology, we call that the feedback hypothesis, that if you smile, you release brain chemicals that actually make you feel happier. So actually, movement and action make a change in people's lives.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. I remember once I was at this festival when the book first came out, and I was on a panel, and someone asked a question I couldn't believe she asked. She said, is it worse to lose a child in an accident quickly or slowly with illness? And the fact is, it's awful to lose a child anyway, in any form. The thing is, I think when you love someone, when you care about someone, you want to do something that memorializes their lives in a positive way that represents that person, and for every person that is different. We have ended up working with many people who have lost children. They have found the jester and they have contacted me. One incredible mother in particular in Rhode Island, her son, Neil Fashone, 5 years before he died, worked with a student leadership training program summer session that used the jester, and I didn't ever know about it until a little earlier, to teach children how to grab laughter out of their lives, how to feel positive. And this young man worked and read The Jester Has Lost His Jingle to these children. And he ended up with a terrible brain tumor that was inoperable. And he died shortly before his 21st birthday. He was in college. But I stayed in touch with his mother. And she loved what we did with The Jester, because when people make a donation to us, if they donate $10, we donate a copy of the book to a real child in a real hospital, and they are able to have David's message and laughter and joyful outlook on life with them all the time. He asked friends in his memory, because he knew he was not going to survive, to please donate to us so that he could continue helping children after he died. And we have been working with her now for several years. And one of the things that happened at the book festival today, I met someone who works at one of the hospitals we donate to, and she said, "Oh, I can't begin to tell you how happy you make these children when they receive your Jester book and the Jester and Farley doll. They just smile and they laugh. Many of them can't even afford to have books in their home, but they take this beautifully bound hardcover book that speaks to them daily, and they just love it. And for me, that's what makes it all worthwhile."
It's beautiful. And the other thing, Barbara, is it says here, "When I feel like crying, I sing my loudest and dance my best. Also, I dance not just when the music is playing, but when it's not playing." So it seems like there's like, you talk about the seed inside us, the seed of that joy. So it was almost like there's a gesture inside all of us that needs to get out, but maybe it's down there somewhere deep, you know, the joyful part of our personalities, the happiness, right? And especially when you go through hard times, like you said, adversity, and, you know, deal with trauma victims and all, it may be hidden somewhere.
Right.
But you almost have to force yourself in some ways, right? You know, to like smile and laugh and, you know, do those things. It feels artificial in the beginning, right? It doesn't feel natural.
Right.
Because you're stuck in the grief or the problem. But then eventually, I think it starts to elevate you a little bit. Did you find that to be the case?
I think that's
true. I mean, how did you get out of the house after all this stuff? You know?
Well, I didn't get out of the house for a little while.
Right.
And at that time, I was an editor at the Los Angeles Times, and they were very kind to me. And I was a daily entertainment editor, and they gave me a leave for as long as I needed. And when I came back, I was ready to work. And one of the things I learned from the book, and one of the things that David learned as he was creating the book, he didn't draw all his pictures in the order that they took place. He drew them in the order he needed to draw them that spoke to him and his particular issues that day. The story really turns on a little girl in the hospital. The Jester has started looking for laughter all over the world. He can't find it anywhere. And he and Farley, stand outside a hospital, and the Jester reminds Farley that it's up to us to make a difference. It's up to us to care. And they go in and they encounter a little girl who says she feels very sad and she doesn't feel like laughing anymore. And the Jester, who has still not yet found laughter,
said, "I have a tumor and no humor." Right?
Yeah, she says, "Here I lie, I have a tumor, and you ask me where's my sense of humor? Mm-hmm. I've been very sick. I'm so tired of trying. I don't feel like laughing. I just feel like crying." And the Jester's...
Or even dying, probably.
She never says that.
No, she didn't, but I mean, that could be in her mind sometimes.
Well, only tumor is mentioned. It never says she might have cancer. We don't know that. And the Jester says, "Well, sometimes I feel like crying, too." And then he says what you just recently said, that he turns his sadness upside down and stands it on its head and tries to laugh again. And so he entertains the little girl exactly the way he entertained the king. But she finds laughter deep inside herself, and it is through this little girl that the Jester and Farley and the little girl all learn to laugh again, and the laughter escapes from her and goes throughout the city, and that brings laughter back into the world.
Wow.
So it is also people working together, and it is people finding the joy within themselves at a time that it might be hard to do so. And the end of the story is that when you're feeling lonely or sad or bad or blue, remember where laughter's hiding. It's hiding inside of you.
Okay, yeah. So it's kind of a nice, beautiful way. You know, psychology, we call it mood contagion. Where your moods are contagious. So if you have very negative people, you can become negative. But if they're joyful, you can become joyful.
Absolutely.
So when you start laughing, it kind of becomes a therapy.
Right.
And we read that, you know, in the research, that it reduces stress when you laugh. It also increases endorphins, which is a positive brain chemicals. Even in the cancer wards, you've heard of Norman Cousins.
Oh, you know, absolutely.
The guy that wrote the book about that, where they diagnosed him for a couple months to live, and then he started watching these funny movies.
Right.
And then he actually recovered.
Right.
And wrote a best-selling book on that aspect.
Right.
So laughter is a great medicine.
It is.
But the other thing, this book, I mean, it seems like a very realistic, almost, you know, it's a little dark in some ways, but is that, you guys intended it that way?
I think he used it to explore the feelings and to look at a lot of reality. The homeless man is not a general feature of children's literature.
The tumor thing, right?
And the tumor. Yeah. When David conceived of the story, he had never met that little girl.
Right.
He did not know he had cancer.
Oh.
So all of that happened before his diagnosis.
Really?
Yeah.
So you wrote it before that?
He wrote the story idea and the words.
Wow.
And then he worked on the story, developed it, you know, kept rewriting and redrawing. But the whole format began in the summer. And he returned to Yale in September, and he was diagnosed in early October.
Did he get a premonition or something? Or did he knew something was happening?
That's hard to say. That would be conjecture on my part. In many ways, I think we often can feel how our body is talking to us.
Right.
David was a very sensitive person. He could sense people's feelings.
Right. Empathetic.
He was extremely empathetic and very compassionate and very giving. And he was like that from the time he was a little boy. And in fact, even when he was at Yale and being treated for cancer, and everybody knew that, he continued doing all of his cartooning. He cartooned for two competing student newspapers. He helped kids with posters and t-shirts if they needed them. He was a Yale tour guide. He never stopped doing any of his obligations. But one of the things that always happened, people would always send people who were very sad to him. If nobody else could help them get out of their difficult situations, they would end up sending someone to David, and he would draw them out of their depth of feeling that was so low and bringing them down.
Very loving person. Now, are you more of a logical personality? How would you describe yourself? You seem like you're kind of like very realistic.
Nobody's ever asked me that. I think I'm both realistic and spontaneous at the same time.
Right.
I never can keep my desk organized or my files organized.
Are you more of a thinker or a feeler, would you say, making choices? Because we wrote a book, Love Types, that talks about the whole personality.
I think I'm a little bit of each. I'm actually a very good editor, and as an editor, you have to be very logical and
critiquing.
And organize and know what you should trim, what you needed, and so forth. But by the same time, I like to enjoy myself and have a good time.
So passion, because thinking and feeling are two different dimensions.
Right.
So you can appeal to the logical side of people, also the emotional side.
Right.
So it seems like this book does a little bit of both.
It does.
It has philosophical messages if you read deeper.
Yeah.
And actually, some children's books do that. You know, like you read them at a deeper level.
Exactly.
And then he also has the emotional side of things.
Yeah.
Right.
Very astute.
That's what I'm saying. So I think you're looking at something that can change a lot of lives. Even adults reading to the children can learn something from the book.
That is just such a wonderful thing for you to grasp from this, because David really didn't write it just for children.
Right.
We had to classify it as a children's picture book in order to get it into bookstores.
Right.
And people wanted me to classify it for ages. And so I reluctantly put on the dust jacket 4 to 8, but in truth, it was like from 1 to 101, I used to say. And then I was at a convention, and a librarian wanted to buy it for her grandmother, who was 103. And I said, well, we're going to have to change that around a little bit. And we find many responses that I get from the book that tell us how much the book has helped them, adults, deal with their lives at that particular time. And over my lifetime, I have met other people who lost children before me and subsequently. And many of them, I saw their lives spiral apart. I saw their careers go down the drain, their marriages break apart, their abilities to relate with people disappear. And I really promised myself and David that is something I would never do, that I would not let the death of this wonderful, optimistic, jovial, but sometimes very serious child turn me into a bitter old woman. And it was a very logical choice and emotional I made at that time. That doesn't mean to say that I still don't cry some of the time, and there aren't times when when tears well up, but I think it's very important when you care about someone deeply that your grief for them doesn't come out in negative ways. I think you have to be optimistic and work on their behalf to make the world a better place as they would do if they were still alive.
That's a good point. Yeah, because I mean, all of us will die, but the key is what you leave behind.
Exactly.
You know, the legacy, you know, it could be emotional or spiritual or practical.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know, so I think you have a great thing here. This legacy you're leaving, you know, is very wonderful.
Thank you.
And giving it to children, you know, and others that will grow from this. Right. So it's a very beautiful thing. I want to try something. Can you call this young lady over here?
Jen.
Jenny, come here. We're going to do a little exercise right now. Everyone here, laughter is the best medicine, okay? So I want everyone now to laugh as much as possible, okay? Just feel the feeling, okay?
All right.
Because that's positive energy, okay? Everyone, you guys, camera guys, video guys, ready? 1, 2, 3. Thank you for, we're a little crazy, but we laugh, right? thank you, Barbara, for being on the show. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Dr. Avila.
So, you know, laughter is a great medicine,
it
right?
Is.
It's a great transformation. And also love, right? Because you're talking
it
about
is.
Love.
No question.
So I see the Love Energy and Love University here. We'd love to have you back on the show.
Thank you.
Maybe do something with you in the future.
I would love that.
Presentations. We love that. You know, the laugh, right?
Yes.
We love the laugh. So this is Love University. And where can people get a hold of you? And tell us more about where you can do it.
Yes. Our website is www.thejester.org, O-R-G. Our telephone number is 800-9-JESTER or 310-544-4733. And I would love to hear from your audience and others who are aware of the book, who have kept the book for a period of time. I would love to hear your response to the book and how it has impacted your life.
I love that. I'd love to get a copy of it. And
That won't be hard.
Okay. It's been a wonderful time to see you. So again, if you have any questions for Barbara or for the show, reach us at loveuniversity.love, lovetypeforyou@aol.com, LOVETYPE, the number 4, letter U at AOL. Call us at 310-226-8090. So this is Dr. Alex. I'm going to put away your pens, your notepads, your iPads. Love University is now dismissed.